Joining us now is Chandra Niles Folsom, who is a superb investigative reporter. And as a result of her great investigative reporting, I can consider Chandra Niles Folsom a friend of mine. What do you think, Chandra? Are we friends?
I think that we're friends. We've worked on more than a few projects together over the years.
We absolutely have, and I trust your judgment. I'm so thrilled. You've completed a screenplay, and the screenplay is something that is now getting a big buzz because it talks about something, the subject, that not only comes up on the newspapers every day, but frankly is something part of our dinner table conversation, and that is greed. And your screenplay is called Greed Indexed, based on the true unfiltered story of the Merrill Lynch whistleblower. And I'd like to hear all about it, Chandra. Welcome to the show today. Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. So, first of all, you know, you have so many different, I know, every single day people are pulling at you. Please investigate this. Please look into that. Why did this story capture you?
Well, you know, I'll go back a little bit. I'd written a magazine story in about 2006 called Mother Merrill and the Robber Barons of the Big Board. And what had happened was I had known people who had worked at Merrill Lynch during the stock market boom. And, you know, I was pretty actually horrified by their blatant greed. And when the news broke that the New York Attorney General was doing an investigation and then brought charges against them with unprecedented, at that time, penalties, I pitched the idea to a magazine to do a story. And what I discovered about the firm through my sources went way beyond the headlines. I was really surprised that it wasn't just what I was reading every day. And as I tried to find brokers and former brokers at the firm to talk to me, I couldn't find anybody who was willing to talk because, you know, they had to sign confidentiality agreements.
Yeah, it's true.
And then I found Keith Schooley's book. He had written a book called Mother Merrill. Actually, that was my article. He wrote a book called Merrill Lynch, The Cost Could Be Fatal, My War Against Wall Street's Giant. And I called him, and I just figured that just like everyone else, he would say, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you, and hang up. But he had already sued. He had worked at Merrill Lynch. He was squeaky clean. He really believed that Merrill Lynch was a good firm. And that's why he went to work there, and he was a top-rated broker. And as he went on his business about selling, you know, stocks and securities, he started discovering gross fraud and corruption there. And he just assumed that, you know, it was his branch. And so he went to his managers, and he told them what was going on, and they were not at all happy with him. They just told him to be quiet and keep doing what they told him to do. And so he thought, you know, he thought he was doing the right thing, and he thought that the board at Merrill Lynch would be very happy to hear his story. So he went to New York.
Poor naive guy. Yeah, tell us.
But yeah. He really was a Boy Scout, and he is a Boy Scout. And he went to the top brass, and he told them what happened. He actually, to his amazement, he found that the whole board was meeting with him. I have a scene in my screenplay where, you know, he walks into the boardroom. All the board members are sitting there. He looks out the window. There's the Statue of Liberty in the background, and he starts to tell them what was going on. And he found out that they were not at all happy with him being, you know, dissatisfied with the way they conducted business. And then he was really scared, you know, because then he realized that this went far beyond his little division. And he sued them. They fired him for reporting this. He sued them, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And that's what the screenplay is based on, his story.
Now, as a whistleblower, was he ultimately entitled to recover treble damages for his own damages?
No, he wasn't. It's actually a little bit more complicated. I mean, he signed a confidentiality agreement, and, you know, the whistleblower laws are not as airtight as you might think.
So, in other words, he settled the case ultimately.
He lost the case.
He lost the case.
Well, he didn't have the funds. I mean, this company.
Yeah,
at
that's
least
it.
At
they
that
bury
time,
you. No, they bury you. Chandra,
they had millions of dollars to play with, and he didn't. He exhausted his resources.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the larger issue, which is greed, because, you know, it comes up so much. We have, in fact, even now, I think today's headlines in the paper, big banks face another round of U.S. charges. The Justice Department is preparing a fresh round of attacks on the world's biggest banks, again questioning Wall Street's role in a broader array of financial markets. It's all the same. The story doesn't seem to go away. Ever since Gordon Gekko announced to the world that greed was good in the Wall Street film, it seemed like our culture went from a place that, yes, we wanted material things, and yes, everybody wanted to be rich, but we had a little bit of the Puritan pilgrim instinct still left, to a place that became a free-for-all. And any time you criticized somebody for being too greedy, you were called un-American.
Yep, that's true. And also, remember that Wall Street was deregulated, and so the line got really blurred as to what was legal and what wasn't, what was unethical and what wasn't. And people just started doing anything they could to make money, and it just started snowballing. I mean, we've all seen now The Wolf of Wall Street, but this, you know, this was with a big firm. This was with a firm with a very good reputation at the time.
And Merrill Lynch, of course, no longer is. Merrill Lynch disappeared in the 2008 financial crisis.
It disappeared. It didn't really disappear. It got absorbed, I would say, by Bank of America. It's just now a small bit player in the, you know, Bank of America conglomerate, but it still exists, and there were still headlines. I mean, why I'm getting the recent surge of interest in my screenplay is because, you know, a recent Fortune magazine article reported that the firm's paying out nearly $100 million in settlements that are related to overcharges to mutual fund customers, retirement accounts, and charities. And then that was nothing. I mean, all of a sudden, right after that, the Justice Department announced a record-breaking $17 billion settlement that had been reached with Bank of America, Merrill's parent company, related to the fraudulent marketing and mortgage-backed securities that actually led to the economic meltdown. And $17 billion is not chump change. It is bigger than the gross domestic product of 102 countries.
It's pretty extraordinary altogether. And at the root of it, I mean, look, we have the federal government still trying to go after Steve Cohen. We still have written into our tax code preferential treatment for the trades of hedge fund managers, which should not be given preferential treatment as the way they are. We have institutionalized in a very significant way greed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what caught my attention about your screenplay, Greed Index. Have you figured out a way to index how greedy people are, Chandra Folsom?
I think it kind of goes off the charts. I don't think you can even index it at this point. You know, I mean, it just, and every time you think it's being cleaned up, and we have this wonderful Elizabeth Warren who's really trying to clean things up, she's got, you know, the odds are really stacked against her.
Well, not only that, they deprived her of the job that she was seeking, which really might have had an impact.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They didn't let her become the head of this Consumer Finance Protection Agency. Instead, they shipped her off to Massachusetts, where she barely won.
Well, but she is still, I mean, she's still commanding a lot of attention at the time. Now. I mean,
she's commanding attention as a potential presidential nominee, but on a nuts and bolts basis, she's not actually able to do the job that she thought and we thought that she would be doing, which was regulating financial industry.
Well, she started it, and I think she's made some pretty good headway, and she's actually got a copy of Keith's book. She grew up in the same town as Keith's
school.
Is that
right?
In Oklahoma. Yep.
That's funny.
They went to rival high schools, actually.
So what do you think, Chandra? Can we be Boy Scouts? What kind of an attitude should we have towards all of this? For those of us who actually have money and need to save it and protect it and put it places, what should we do?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it used to be that people with money were safe. People with money aren't safe anymore. Back before the stock market crashed and the economy collapsed in 2008, people with money were just pretty arrogant about it. They trusted who they were giving their money to. They thought, well, we're beyond all of this. Well, they weren't. They found out that they got cheated just the same as everyone else.
So what's happening with your screenplay? What's the next stage? How do you get it made into actual celluloid or digital?
Okay, well, this is the tricky part that I discovered, because I had had a screenplay commissioned that was made as a lower budget film called Chamber of Shadows in 2009, and I didn't really realize how tough it was. When I wrote this, Keith came up with the idea. He said, "I think my story might make a pretty good film. What do you think?" And I said, "I think so. Let me write it." And so I wrote it, and we gave it to an agent and an entertainment attorney, and then I started discovering just how tricky it was, you know, because they want financing, they want talent attached to the project, the talent wants a studio, the studio wants talent, they all want money, and so it is just sort of this game of going from studio to studio. I'm getting a lot of good response from it, and I've met with a lot of, you know, well-known producers in Hollywood, and I'm going back in a couple of weeks to meet with some more. But it always comes down to funding. Who's going to fund this? But they're all interested. And every time Merrill Lynch does something else bad, or Bank of America, or one of the other firms, there's another surge of interest. I get some more phone calls.
Well, good luck with it, Chandra. Maybe you should try and get on Shark Tank. That's become my new addiction. And I don't think anybody's pitched a film, at least in the episodes I've seen. I haven't seen all of the seasons yet. But I've never seen them pitch the ultimate speculative venture, which is a movie. Might be interesting. I don't think they've done it yet.
Might be. But
and you'd be pitching it to the people who you'd be really talking their language, let me tell you. Have you seen Shark Tank?
I've heard of Shark Tank, and I think I've seen clips of it, but it kind of scares me.
It's the one. Am I talking about the right one, Kenny? Is that the name of the one? I always make the name wrong. Shark
yes.
Tank is the one where they sit in front of the five people and try and get money, right?
I don't know. I don't watch Shark Tank.
Oh, forget it.
I think that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Please. Well, there's a bald guy who's always really mean, and he never gives money to anyone. But if you're lucky, you can get Barbara Corcoran or Mark Cuban. Those would be my two favorites.
Oh, yeah. I think Mark Cuban might be...
Yeah, he might.
A good one.
Yeah, he might. All right, Chandra Folsom, thanks so much for joining us today, and good luck with Greed Index.
Thanks, Lisa.
A pleasure.